The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is John Silver, lead recruiter of the Dark Order, and you are listening to All Things Elite.
Welcome to the 149th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwitz, and I am the host of this lovely show. Joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and good friend, Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how are you doing?
I am doing great. I've been watching the NFL draft for this past 2 days. My team has had a very not sexy draft. Very solid, got your needs. You're not going to know what these dudes can do for like a year or two, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like a lot of people are getting excited about players, like you, with your Alliance draft, who's had an amazing draft.
Ours has been incredibly sexy.
Yeah, you have, you know, you got some big names for the future. The Chiefs have gotten some very solid players and like some very look like dependable rotation players going in the future. So I haven't got, you know, I'm not super excited about that. But the nerves are starting to hit because next Thursday morning at 10 a.m. is the pre-sale for the Forbidden Door. And
yes,
if the I think if AEW did like that, you know, you could sign up for the pre-sale list. I think it would be probably about in the 40 or 50,000 for this. 16,000 to 20,000 seat arena. I don't know what the setup's going to be like for it.
Do we know how you can get access to the presale?
It's generally those things come out Wednesday if you're signed up for All Elite Fleet,
or if it's Pro Wrestling Tees,
or Pro Wrestling Tees, you'll get the presale code Wednesday morning, and I will tweet out the All Elite Fleet pre-sale code. Also, if you're a member of Hills, they generally get their own pre-sale code. So those are the three different ways to get pre-sale codes. They generally are shared and floated around somewhere. It's like I'm really excited to try to get tickets. I want to be on the floor. I think it's going to be a shit show.
It's going to be absolutely insane. I know we're going to be trying our ass off to try to get the best possible seats that we can. I mean, this is one of those shows where it's like getting the best possible seats is probably going to be incredibly difficult, where it's like you're just going to have to try to hope you can get seats, not even like where you're going to sit. It's just like hope you can get in, because this shit's going to go so fucking quick. But I will say my NFL thing real quick. Aiden Hutchinson, the Michigan boy, coming home. We got bold and took a wide receiver in the first round. Oh, Jameson Williams is going to be so good when he heals from his ACL tear. And we kept fortifying the defense. The Lions are going to be making noise, people, in the next few years. And it's going to confuse so many people when we do. And I'm very hopeful for that team because, man, I hope they really start to put things together. And your guys' Kansas City Chiefs did well as well. However, I will say, because you took a Western Michigan Bronco, I hope that man Sky Moore is a bust.
It's so crazy when it's like being a Chiefs fan, I am in a unique position that I haven't been in my life. We're the alpha dogs. You know what I mean? We're one of the top five teams in the NFL. What we're trying to do is draft to sustain success. But literally for the most of my 28, 29 year fan as a Chiefs fan, we were either trying to get to that next step, right? Trying to get to that next step or, you know, trying to build for the future. So we're in this weird position, like we're not trying to draft Hall of Famers, which you're always trying to draft Hall of Famers, but I'm just saying. We're like, we want solid rotation players that will keep us where we are and get us that extra step back to the Super Bowl. Because, again, 4 years, we were in the AFC Championship game. So 4 years in a row, we were one game away from the Super Bowl. That is, I know people don't like to throw that word around because we didn't win four Super Bowls, but that's a pretty strong dynasty right there, you know? Six division titles in a row, so it's just like we're at this point where how do you maintain? How do you keep drafting the Chiefs way? Keep drafting Chiefs players. Mm-hmm. And like the guy from Western Michigan, he's a Chiefs player. He's a little wide receiver that's fast. Mm-hmm. He fits into the mold of the wide receivers that we take. The defensive end from Purdue, hustle guy. He's an energy guy. I mean, he fits into the mold of a former defensive end we had named Jared Allen. None of these picks are sexy. They're not going to be like, oh, my God, we're not going to get an A at the end of this draft. We're not going to get an A+. We'll probably get B, maybe C+. And it's like, but again, those grades don't matter for 4 or 5 years. It's just like, it's like whatever.
We're never going to know really how everything plays out until a few years.
No one comes back and like, oh, okay, this is how this grade out. Occasionally they'll do a redraft. But then I'm like, let's see what these players did. Because I was like, I called like 2017, the year we got Mahomes, like the year that we had a hell of a draft. No, we got two really good players and four people that never even made it into the rotation out of the seven players we took.
Yeah.
It was like it really wasn't a great draft. But when one of your picks is Patrick Mahomes, you call it a great draft.
It's a great draft, right?
Yeah, so enough of football, but it's just – I always, as I've gotten older, I'm starting to get fascinated with the mind of a fan and how we fan, you know what I mean? And the different emotions that go in the draft. Like someone's like, you took Aiden Hutchinson and you love it. And a lot of people love it. But I guarantee you there was a Lions fans like, Aiden Hutchinson, taking him was the dumbest thing ever. That's why we're going to suck forever.
Well, I mean, I know there's people that preferred Kayvon Thibodeau. I've heard people say that. And, of course, there's a lot of people that are criticizing the pick where we traded up for Jameson Williams, where they wanted Jordan Davis, which
– who knows? Jameson Williams could, you know, get back from the ACL, come in, have a strong second half of the season – next year.
We saw how fast Cam Akers came back from his Achilles tear.
Yeah, and then the year two, Jameson Williams could be the next Ja'Marr Chase, right? And he could be like a future Hall of Famer.
Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Or he could never get his speed back from the ACL injury or somewhere in between, which is probably where he'll be at. It's just so many variables that come into football. It's just like, you know, a lot of times it's in like the draft is such an exciting night as you look forward to the future and you react, but really you don't know shit for years.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just the whole idea, the psychology of fandom has started fascinating me as I got older.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, we're wrestling fans. I mean, the psychology of wrestling fans are interesting sure.
We were just talking about that. Fans have an opinion on everything. Your graphics, your logo, your fonts. Oh my God, why was his font all capitalized and her font was all lowercase? The newest thing, the moving picture to announce.
Yes, we got moving graphics on Twitter for pay-per-views.
Yes, and people are going crazy on this. Something I would have never even noticed. I'm like, yeah. okay,
so someone was just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they had WWE style like moving graphics for their pay per views? And Tony Khan was like, that's a cool idea, does it? And everyone's like, oh my god, they got moving graphics
because it's so weird because they listen. AEW listens to their fans.
And that's probably the reason why people were freaking out, is that something said on Twitter, and they were kind of like, that's a cool idea. And everyone's like, our opinions are being taken into consideration? The fuck is going on?
Yeah, but I always say it's a good and a bad thing, because they do that.
It gives the fans an ego, for sure.
Yes, and now they're just like, okay, well, now you should just throw Sami and Ty away because we don't like them. And it's just like, no, they're really talented wrestlers and really good at the job. I don't care. I don't like them anymore. They should go away. You said you were going to listen to your fans. Well, I'm going to listen to my fans when they say something intelligent.
something that I also think is a good idea.
Yeah, with something that makes sense. You know, it's just so funny because, yeah, that's the whole thing with it. It's the, it is, with every good intentions, there's a negative to it. But, yeah, fans have an opinion on everything. I admit it. I have had those moments where it's like, oh, my God. I mean, okay, this is a big match, and they came out, and that's the entrance? They couldn't come up with anything better for the entrance? I'm big on entrances. I think entrances, when done right, can use this story, tell the story of what's coming in wrestling. Like WrestleMania 6, I mean 7. I don't know if you've seen that WrestleMania or not, but there's this match between Ultimate Warrior and a Macho Man. It was a retirement match, right? Mm-hmm. And for the first time in his career, the Ultimate Warrior walked to the ring. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. From that moment, that set the standard and the state. And it set the mood that this match was more important than every other match that he's been in. Because even the world title match against Hogan, he ran to the ring.
Yep.
But in this match against Macho Man, he walked. And it's just like that little subtle change elevated the importance of that match. Even when I was like, shit, I was young with WrestleMania 11. I was like 11. But I understood that, you know, that elevated the match. You know what I mean? So it's like, WrestleMania, what, 7? Oh, okay, so I was like 8. And I understood that elevated the match. So it's just like, I don't know. So I'm big into how the entrances are different. And we actually had a different entrance this week on AEW, so I will get to talk about that in just a second.
Yeah, but we'll get out of the way of our little off-tangent opening. I hope you guys enjoyed us rambling about tons of shit. But we got a lot to talk about with this week's episode of All Things Elite. Before we get into the show itself, I want to make sure you guys are downloading this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. If you listen to us on Spotify or any other podcasting platforms, please give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. You can leave a rating and a review, and if you're so inclined, you can also leave a donation through our podcast provider, Red Circle. But the easiest way for you guys to support us is by following us on social media. On Twitter, we are at ATElitePod, at Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible. Please check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And we'll open things up right now with the big news of the week in AEW, which is that we have the official main event announced for Double or Nothing. And I want to hold on that, because if we talk about this main event, I'm going to go off for a minute. But I want to talk. I want to give Floyd the opportunity to go off and go into his fandom moment first before I go myself. So we'll get immediately into Dynamite from this week in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where we opened with the Owen Hart Foundation tournament qualifying match between the Collision of FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler facing off for a spot in the Owen Hart tournament with CM Punk as the special guest commentator. The Bret Hart Owen Hart love is all over this match, as you can tell. So I'm going to step back from this match, honestly, because I don't think there's anything that I can say that Floyd won't immediately say and won't say in a better way. Plus, you're going to get me going nuts pretty shortly afterwards anyway. So Floyd, for this FTR Collision match for the Owen Hart Foundation qualifying spot, I will give it to you for this match between Dax and Cash.
With a tear in my eye, yes. As I say when I'm very excited about something, perfectly thrown back to Ric Flair after he won the world title in the Royal Rumble. A throwback of sorts. Dax and Cash, two throwback wrestlers, come to the ring. And so their music hits. And someone was like, oh, man, we get to hear the FTR music twice. Not so fast, my friend. First of all, let me rebound. The show starts with CM Punk's music. Now, CM Punk's music hits and he sits down, and Punk, as old school of a wrestling fan as anyone, says, you know what, they, you know, it seems like they want him to talk more, but he's like, no, let's get to the match. He was excited for this match, and then the music hits, FTR's music hits, and out the face tunnel comes Dax, out the heel tunnel comes Cash, and they come out at the same time, and they walk slowly to the ring, donning their FTR jackets, but pink and black gear with a skull, a pink and black with a skull. One says Cash, one says Dax. They're pretty much wearing matching clothes. And you just feel like, again, when you talk about the entrances, when you change the entrance, right? They could have played FTR's music. One came down and the other came down, but they both came down. They are such a team. This is how they've debuted. This is how they've come to the ring their whole career, you know. And they come to the ring and they size each other up. And you have what some people will refer to as a solid wrestling match. Some people have called it classic. Some people have called it the best wrestling singles match in AEW history. I will let you decide where you want to be. For me, it was a match that meant a lot to me personally and emotionally. FTR talks about it all the time. They talk about how you can have the moves and all that stuff, but they loved Bret because he made them feel. I talk about it all this time. I don't watch wrestling with my head quite a bit. I watch it with my heart. So this match, I watch with my heart. And I'm seeing the headlock takeovers and the reversals into pin attempts and then the arm bars and nip-ups. And I'm just watching them have this, like, great technical match, and it's like some of the spots I immediately knew where they came from, like the victory roll spot, and you know when he threw him into the turnbuckle, and of course the finish ended. I knew, I had a feeling in my gut that's how the finish was gonna end, but FTR perfectly, in their own way, paid tribute to all of their favorite matches with all of their favorite wrestlers. And they did it in a way only FTR could. I will say this. If you look at the young Mr. Dax Harwood, who Cash calls the best wrestler in the world, and you see his headlock takeovers, I mean, you know, I don't think anyone has as much snap and much aggression and as much, as looks much like an offensive move as Mr. Dax Harwood. And then everything they did, it looks like it was done for the purpose of winning the match. Something that, you know, can be lost today. I'm not one of those people that old wrestling is better than new wrestling. I think there's a place for both of them to exist. But yes, this was done. It was the little things. Everything looked like a struggle. Everything looked like a guy, two guys trying to win the match. It got a little heated in the corner when Dax's hand accidentally slipped into Cash's eye, and he just, you know, you're in the heat of battle and you get poked in the eye. You don't want to hear, oh man, that's not my bad, I didn't mean to do that. You're like, dude, let's fight. And they had a great match. Pile drivers, the slingshot sit out powerbomb, which is my favorite move that Dax does other than the brainbuster, which he didn't hit in this match. But then we get to the end. And even another subtle story told. Cash hurt his knee. Dax was about to take advantage of it with the sharpshooter. Not the Scorpion Deathlock, but the sharpshooter. And he was about to take advantage. But, you know, that's his partner. He doesn't want to hurt him. So he hesitated. Cash then rolled up Dax based on that hesitation and almost gets the three. But Dax then adjusts the small package to get the three. A perfectly done match where it looks like two very even wrestlers. One was just a little better that day. A masterpiece in singles wrestling as far as the story they were trying to tell. Two very skilled people that know each other very well, and that it was going to come down to a fluke. And the three count, if you ever want to know where that's from, the King of the Ring. It's 93. I might be saying the wrong year. It's either 93 or 92. The finish came from the second round match between Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. And yeah, Mr. Perfect did a roll up. Bret then adjusted the roll up and barely beat Mr. Perfect. It's one of Dax's favorite matches. So I knew that was going to be the end of the, I knew it was going to be the end of the match. And it was very, it was beautifully done. Story told, match lived up to, match lived up to this hype. And they said first time, last time, but I don't know. This felt like the first match of more than one. I don't know if they break up. I don't think they break up. Maybe they have to qualify in the Owen Cup again next year or something like that. But I don't feel like this is the last time they lock up.
Honestly, I hope it's not the last time they locked up, because they work really well against each other. Like, obviously, FTR is an outstanding tag team, if not one of the best tag teams currently in AEW. They are unbelievably over together as a pairing, so breaking them up would be a terrible idea. But if these guys were to ever go at each other again, I think it would be a great decision on their part, because again, I think it's very interesting to see these two face off, and they did a great job. Honestly, I've got nothing but good things to say about this match. Dax winning, I think, makes sense. He was the one who's had more singles matches in AEW than Cash, and it was a little bit of a quick counter that got him to get the win, and it was great work on Dax's part to get that win.
The last thing I want to say is it is incredibly awesome as a FTR fan to see the elevation and love of them coming along. And how many people are just really, like, jumping. And I hate to say the word bandwagon, because bandwagon has a negative connotation. I want you on the bandwagon. As a person that has been an FTR fan forever, and I feel like I've brought a few people along with me, it is amazing to see how much love these men are getting. And it's just like, and it feels like a big old, and in no way victory lap. Like, I told you so. I have been saying this. You know what I mean? You've been on the show with me, and I've been saying that they're the best tag team in the world. And now everyone else is saying they're the best tag team in the world. And I'm like, have y'all not heard me for the last 2 years? It's like, I don't know. I guess I was talking to myself. I don't know. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I don't want it to come off anyway other than complete happiness for two people that have entertained me on a level that I can't even explain. So I am glad they're getting everything. They rushed out a hoodie because their stuff was selling well, and it's immediately in the top sellers list on Shop AEW. It's like an FTR hoodie in April is selling at the top list and on AEW, and it's just, it's amazing. Keep supporting them. Keep rooting for them. I hope when they do another signing, I hope the line's way too long and I get annoyed. I love it. Keep supporting my boys.
Yeah, and I will say as well, speaking of Shop AEW and Pro Wrestling Tees, those polos of Macho Man, those polo shirts are awesome, and I'm probably going to have to snag one of those. But moving over into immediately after that match between Dax and Cash, CM Punk, who was at commentary for this match, quickly found out that we have that main event for Double or Nothing, the first match announced for Double or Nothing 2022. The AEW World Championship will be defended. Hangman Adam Page versus CM Punk. And Punk got on mic and proceeded to cut a great promo, gave a nice shout out to Dax and Cash, and talked about how he looked himself in the mirror and asked himself, can he still do this? And he wanted to show no disparagement to anybody he's faced in the ring except for maybe Eddie Kingston. But everything up to this point was a warm-up, and he's only just getting warm. And he said he can't promise a victory for certain, but he can promise a Hangman that you will get everything of CM Punk, because if it wasn't for these people who gave everything to him, he wouldn't have come back after 7 years. He wouldn't be doing what he's doing right now. And he said he's going to, like he's been saying for a while, he's going to keep riding till the wheels fall off, and he wants to be AEW World Champion. All right. Now, I've already been very vocal about the fact that the first time I ever saw CM Punk live in a wrestling ring was Rampage, the First Dance at the United Center when he made his return after 7 years. The first time I saw CM Punk wrestle live was AEW All Out 2021, where he proceeded to win and wrestle his first match back after 7 years against Darby Allin. And I will be in attendance in Las Vegas, Nevada for Double or Nothing 2022. And as a man that he used to call himself, a Paul Heyman guy, he normally says, this is not a prediction, this is a spoiler. CM Punk will become AEW World Champion, and I will be in attendance when that moment happens. People can tell me all the time, Hangman's run needs to continue. Hangman needs another definitive championship defense. People can tell me everything they want to hear and what they believe in. And I got nothing but love and respect for Hangman Adam Page. In the four champions that we've had as world champions in AEW, Chris Jericho, Jon Moxley, Kenny Omega, and now most recently Hangman Adam Page. Hangman has absolutely lived up to all of those champions that have come before him in AEW. He is absolutely considered to be one of the best AEW world champions that we have in that small group. And he's put on classic matches. His first defense, hell, was against Bryan Danielson, and he managed to make that match so good, and he's done such a good job. His most recent defense against Adam Cole was outstanding. But all of that will end in Las Vegas at Double or Nothing when my boy CM Punk becomes the AEW World Champion. And this is the thing that I am almost certain of, because the fans have been all on the board of the CM Punk fun train since he's returned. But now that he's going for the championship, I am almost certain that there are going to be people that doubt my boy, that discredit my guy, and discredit him becoming AEW World Champion, because they'll say he shouldn't be champion because it should stay on Hangman. I understand that, but you can kindly go fuck yourself with that opinion. CM Punk will be champion. There is no doubt in my mind that that is going to be the case, and I will be in attendance when it happens. So myself being there, and I can say with every single point of CM Punk's incredible AEW career thus far, all of the milestones that he has had so far, his first appearance, his first win, and now his first championship, I will be at the arena when it happens. You cannot deny this. I am willing this. I am manifesting this into existence. There is nothing else anybody can say. It is CM Punk or nothing. And if you've got a problem with that, kick rocks.
All right. I have nothing to follow up on that segment. We can kindly move on to the next topic.
That is my weekly. I annoy y'all with my CM Punk fandom. And listen, it's going to be true. So just grow to accept it. And I know I'm going to be getting to the point where people turn on CM Punk, because, hell, we've seen what happens. People turning on Sammy Guevara. People turned on Cody Rhodes. Floyd can attest to that right then. I'm expecting a turn because of Punk going for the world championship. I'm expecting it because I know how wrestling fans act. So if y'all are part of that turn, up yours. But anyways, I will move on from my CM Punk fandom. It will continue until AEW Double or Nothing. And if not, it will amplify when he wins the AEW World Championship after Double or Nothing. But after that, the Blackpool Combat Club had a six-man match against The Factory, QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, and Nick Camarado, and Anthony Ogogo was actually on TV. It was very good to see him back on TV, even though he wasn't wrestling. This was pretty quick work. Of course, Wheeler Yuta, in his hometown, was really proceeding to get incredible reactions from the crowd. Yuta was all over the place doing some great stuff. He took a lot of punishment as well, which really helped it make a big moment when he did eventually get one over the factory with him and working on especially with the good idea for him having Nick Camarado really starting to push him down, which I saw the video also online of Nick Camarado proposing to his then girlfriend at an independent wrestling ring show, and his girlfriend is a independent wrestling referee. Congratulations to him. I want to say that as well. It's a very cool moment. If you haven't seen the video on Twitter, definitely seek it out. It is very cute. Very, very cute. But the Blackpool Combat Club gets the win. These guys have been running roughshod. Now, I will ask Floyd, because I know the rumors about the Trios Tag Team Championship has been rumored for AEW. Do you think we get a debut or an announcement about that possible Trios Championship at Double or Nothing? Or do we get it going down the road? When do you think we're going to get any word about this possible Trios Championship? Because with the way that things have been set up, it seems like almost inevitability that we're going to get a Trios Championship.
I will say one of the biggest gaps in this AEW, beautiful AEW schedule is between that. It's like that June to September. And I think that's a good summer tournament will be the Trios title. So I think it'll be after Double or Nothing.
Do you think they announce it at Double or Nothing?
Yes, I think they announce it at Double or Nothing. I do.
Okay.
I do want to throw out an idea. You know, William, Lord Regal is from the UK. Someone whose talents is being wasted in the factory, a.k.a. Anthony Ogogo, is from the UK. And, you know, you're in the Blackpool Combat Club, you know. I mean, wouldn't an Olympic boxer be good for the Blackpool Combat Club? I'm just throwing it out there. A go-go for the BCC. I loved him in the Nightmare Factory, but they're beneath him. Mm-hmm. A go-go. Let's get a go-go in the Blackpool Combat Club.
Yeah, honestly, let's make that happen. I think that would be very, very cool.
He's a big old boy. Yeah, I mean, he's like, I think he's ever been as big as Moxley. And, you know, boxer, you know, he needs to be kind of elevated.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to, he could just be like kind of William Regal's muscle. Because William Regal can't be, because of his neck issues, can't be physically involved. And there's been no reason for him to be physically involved. But, you know, I just think it'd be somewhere. I think his talents, his star power is more of a fit for Blackpool Combat Club right now.
I think so as well. I honestly think it fits pretty dang well. But we then had the Murderhawk monster, Lance Archer, get sicked onto Wardlow because of MJF. And, of course, Wardlow has been seen as being coming out handcuffed with no music to try to face off against whoever MJF puts in front of him. Archer got a lot of offense for a little while in this match, but eventually Wardlow was going to get one over on Lance Archer, and he proceeded to powerbomb him repeatedly. And also, Wardlow not only got those multiple powerbombs with his symphony, but showed a lot of agility and like just cardiovascular work, because for God's sakes, he had a Hurricanrana or like a leg scissor sweep that he pulled, and then he proceeded to go and just do a fucking Swanton bomb out of fucking nowhere. I mean, holy shit, like that is like something I do not expect from somebody that size, and it's outrageously cool that he can do stuff like that. Wardlow is gonna be so fucking good, and all I gotta say is this, is that when Miro comes back, if we do not get a Wardlow versus Miro match, I don't know what this company is doing, because that match is like, that is money. That is so money. Like, if they eventually can get to the point where, like, say, Wardlow becomes TNT champion, and then Miro comes back trying to get that TNT championship away from Wardlow. Holy shit.
Okay, so Miro, now that you just gave me an idea, this is brand new, first to hear it because you just gave me the idea. He has a shirt on shop, AEW, and you know what it says on it? The final boss.
Yeah.
What if he's the final boss to get to MJF?
I believe it. I mean, again, how long has Miro been gone, and when were we kind of expecting him to come back?
And there was no expectations. He is healthy. So, you know, that's a big thing. He's healthy. He went out to Hollywood, shot some stuff. He went to Bulgaria recently to visit an aunt. But from what I understand, he's healthy, and they've just kind of been waiting. So, yeah, if Miro the final boss for Wardlow. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I think it would be outstanding. I think, again, Miro is somebody that the fans have desperately missed, and I think him going up against Wardlow would be a great return. Now, obviously, I know some fans would be upset because he would take an L, but I honestly don't think Miro taking one L will stop his momentum from being vicious again. Miro will do so many good things in AEW. I am confident in that because
Miro will come up one more time in the show at least, because I think AEW needs Miro for another part too.
All right, well, we'll get to that point very shortly. But moving on, we had the Jericho Appreciation Society coming out and having a face-to-face with Eddie Kingston and Santana and Ortiz. And they said there would be no physical altercation in this. And Eddie Kingston proceeded to just burst out of there and toss chairs, toss the table away, and was wearing a shirt of Bruiser Brody, shout out. Jericho wanted a apology from Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz since they got kicked out of the arena last week. Ortiz and Santana were like, oh yeah, we'll find our apology for you, and flipped them off multiple times. And Daniel Garcia was feeling himself and was like, y'all threats mean nothing to us. Like, it's not like y'all can hit us, and was doing the like chest forward, like, what you gonna do? Like, you gonna hit us? And Eddie was like, I hate this crap. I don't care about this sports entertainment crap. And he's like, Chris, I told you it's on site. We're going to get you. Let's just fight. I don't care if it's 5-on-3. Stop with this crap. Let's go. Jericho proceeds to run down Eddie Kingston by saying, 5-on-3, you guys aren't smart enough to realize it, so we're going to just take you guys out one by one. And Jericho proceeds to say, there's no company that wants you. No one wants you. This is your last chance. So just stand there, shut up, and do what you're told. And Eddie proceeds to respond by saying, because Jericho said they were going to put a hit on those guys, and said Kingston's response was, look into my eyes, I live behind them. When you say a hit in our world, you better be prepared to be putting somebody in the ground. I don't think y'all are prepared. And as he's just getting in the face and going and smelling the fear off of Chris Jericho, Jericho's going back and back and back and back and further back into his chair. And Eddie scared the shit out of Jericho. And makes sense. That man is somebody you do not fuck with. You do not fuck with Eddie Kingston like that. He will throw a TV at your head. This was a solid promo, I think, honestly. I didn't necessarily love it. I thought it was solid because, like I said, there were certain points like where I thought Garcia's like, what you gonna do shit was like really odd. Like, just it seemed very.
It didn't really fit into the theme and the intensity of the conversation. Also, Eddie went into the. Before he finished that final, you know, when you talk about putting a hit on somebody, you're talking about putting them into the ground. Jericho kind of cut him off.
Yeah.
And then he had to come back and pretty much say the same thing. And it looked like, I don't think Jericho was supposed to cut him off there.
I know, because, I mean, that's the thing with Eddie, though. It's like, when you cut these promos, like, because he was, like, had that one point, he's like, shut up, I swear on my mother, shut up. Because, like, that's the thing with Eddie Kingston-style promos is, like, they don't feel like promos. They feel legit. They feel like these people are, like, about to go to blows because it doesn't feel rehearsed.
Yes, and they did.
But that's the thing, though, is because Jericho is doing that whole sports entertainment stuff where stuff kind of does – it's supposed to kind of feel rehearsed because their promos at the end of the day it didn't gel as well as it could have, I felt like. It wasn't bad. It just didn't gel as well as like it could have, I felt
Yeah, he stepped on Eddie Kingston's most intense moment to where he had to do it the second time, and it didn't come off as intense. But Jericho did come back, and he oversold it the second time with the fearful look on his face. So I think he kind of saved it to a point. But Eddie Kingston's so good. Santana and Ortiz are so good. They're really building the 3-on-5 advantage, so I'm wondering who the two guys are that Eddie's going to bring in. Are they going to go LAX with Hernandez and Homicide? Are they going to use it as a way to debut two new people? Are they are going to use it a way to elevate somebody that's already in the company. I'm really excited to find out because, you know, Double or Nothing, they generally have a, you know, Stadium Stampede or that type of match. So I feel like they're building to that match, and, you know, I like to see what we get to. But we get more later with this thing, so let's go on to the next segment, and then we'll get back to it.
Moving on, yes, we had the Philly street fight between Serena Deeb and Hikaru Shida, a.k.a. one of AEW's best women's feud, if not best feuds in the history of their company, I feel like. These two are so fucking good. I especially loved when the fans legitimately did a Holy Shida chant because I thought that was a really nice touch to the match because it really worked. Serena Deeb using like powder or chalk almost to burn into Sheeta's eyes and really proceeding to just beat the hell out of her with kendo stick shots as well. But that kendo stick got used multiple times in this match. Serena Deeb was really working on the knee of Hikaru Shida at one point, and just multiple uses of steel chairs. And eventually, though, the detox was put on Shida. She kicked out, and then the Serenity Lock, Shida got onto the ropes, no rope breaks, and then turned it into a Texas Cloverleaf, and then that's when Shida had to tap out. Basically, the rope breaks was just like her knee was fucked. And I think Shida getting taking the L and keeping this feud alive and having Deeb get another really definitive win over Hikaru Shida, I love this feud. Again, I am completely fine if these two wrestle like all the fucking time. And I am very much, very much happy about it. And I know they had Thunder Rosa looking out at Serena Deeb. If Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb go at it, I mean, like, we already know, like, these two in NWA were doing great work as well. So I would love it if they do stuff for the AEW Women's Championship. Yeah, I thought this was one of the best matches on the card, honestly. I still would rank the FTR match up a little bit higher just because of the significance of it, but these two would probably be just underneath it in terms of the best match on the card, in my personal opinion. That's just me. But I really love this match, and I love these two.
I will say I really love this match. I love these two wrestling together. I love the result more than most. Serena Deeb is the heel.
Yeah.
She is a heel that you need right now for Thunder Rosa, and they can put on a really great match. She needed this win. Like Shida, you can build her back up later. You could, you know, get Shida in the Owen. You could definitely get her in the Owen Cup if you want to. But she needed to lose this match because you have to build up Serena Deeb as a legit person that can beat Thunder Rosa, and I think you can do that, and I think we're going to get a really good match at Double or Nothing when that match happens. But I thought this match was executed well. I would have liked to see, I'd say, 10% more aggression. That's a nitpick, I'm telling you. It didn't affect it, but I feel like it could have went to that next level with about 10% more aggression. But I really did enjoy that match.
Yeah, I understand that. Moving up, though, we had MJF and Sean Spears getting interviewed and proceeded to give a little hint about who would be going after Wardlow next week. MJF gets on the phone and was like, "You want to make some quick cash next week?" And MJF then proceeds to say, "Next week you're going up against a man who's bigger than you, smarter than you, 7 feet tall, and you can't teach that." So obviously it's Enzo Amore. So if you think it's anybody else, if you don't think it's the real one, you're crazy. No, it's Big Cass. It's Big Cass.
Good old W. Morrissey, just going by his real name. He's very protected in Impact. He literally, the only person he hasn't beat over the last year is Moose. And it's very over. You're kind of seeing he's kind of defined who he is as a character. He is definitely taking care of his physique. I think his physique now looks better than it ever did in NXT or WWE. He's like ripped and he's a giant, and he's looks like he's gotten his life together as far as his meds. So I am very much looking forward to next week. I'm like in the situation, I know Wardlow kind of has to win, But if you want to, again, this is WWE brain, I know. If you want to do like a no contest type thing where they have to fight again the next week, I would honestly, I just don't think it should just be Wardlow winning every week. You know what I mean?
Sure. Like you're worried it's going to be another situation where it's like with CM Punk where he just systematically went through the entire pinnacle to get to MJF.
Yeah, there needs to be a bump in the road. There needs to be something, and
because we've still got a good amount of time until Double like or Nothing.
Month. Yeah, yeah, we have a month, and it's just like it has to be a bump in the road. It has to be a pause with it. I don't know if it's Morrissey or if it's the next week. But I just like to see Wardlow stumble a little bit. I thought this week was going to be the week. I really did with Archer because Archer's kind of protected. He only loses the big matches, you know. He's very protected. So the fact that they just, like, Wardlow just won, I was like, okay, so where are they going from here? So that's, like I said, this is just a, like a fan. Just like, there is, MJF storylines are very formulaic. You know, he gets the advantage, and then the person has to beat a lot of people to get to him. And I just like to see the formula be tweaked a little.
Yeah, I understand that. And again, I think that would be something I absolutely agree with as well. I will say it is weird for me because I remember being in the arena at Madison Square Garden for G1 Supercard. And when Enzo and Cass or whatever they go by nowadays, when they showed up in at MSG in that Ring of Honor New Japan show, I got to tell you, I was pissed. I was so mad. And I mean, like, that was when the connotation and the perception of those two were not good, not very good. I know a lot of people were also very upset about their appearance there. But times have changed, definitely.
I'm the weirdo that loved it. And was
no,
like,
my friend Chad loved it as well. He thought it was great.
And I just thought it was perfect. It felt really real. No one knew what was going on. It felt like Enzo and Kaz XL is what he was called back then.
Yes.
It just felt like they just showed up and, you know, were trying to get on TV and, you know, and then they had a fight with the people there and it felt real, really real.
No, yeah. And yeah, and again, like I said, going back to it, it's definitely a situation that is it was presented pretty coolly.
There was only four or five men that people wanted to see show up that night.
Pretty
and
much.
Those two weren't the four or five men that people
really no. Really, yeah, really no.
Like,
but yeah. I will say, like
if
I said,
if the Young
so
Bucks
much
did the same thing, people would have loved it.
Sure. I mean, hell, that was the same thing that happened with the Impact pay-per-view when I mean not the Impact pay-per-view but the Ring of Honor show that just happened when the Young Bucks showed up and super kicked in that show as well. But I will say I am excited to see him now in this regard because like I said it's a lot more time has passed and I'm glad to see that he's really found some peace with his personal life and his personal demons. No one should have to go through something like that. And I'm glad that he's found a good place in it and he's able to do something that he really enjoys. And I'm excited to see what he does at AEW. Honestly, I do want to see what these two guys do. But yeah, it like I said, it's weird for me because the last time I saw them in a wrestling ring live was at that G1 Supercard show. And ooh, that crowd. Ooh. But moving on. We had the House of Black show up, and they killed Fuego, pretty much. Like, just showed up and killed Fuego on the stage, came out, and they tried to take off Fuego's mask. And then Alex Abrahantes was shrouded in the ring with his little mask and cloak outfit and was talking about how sacrilegious it was to remove a luchador's masks. And then the House of Black was walking towards the ring. Penta Oscuro then comes out, and then the Bastard Pack comes out as well, reuniting with his Death Triangle partner. And then Alex walks out from the back. And it turns out the man that was in the cloak in the middle was Rey fucking Phoenix back from injury. And he just proceeds to thrust kick and kick the shit out of House of Black. And they had triple tope suicidas onto the Death Triangle. I mean, onto the House of Black. Oh, God, yes. House of Black versus Death Triangle. Yes, please. I want that so bad. It's going to be so cool. I'm glad to see that because, again, like I said, with this trios titles thing that seems to be will hopefully be coming very, very shortly. These are two incredible trios that I am very interested in, and a match between these six, in fact, would be incredible.
Absolutely. This is the match that the trios division can be built on. You got three incredibly talented. I mean, Buddy Murphy, you know, he was the biggest secret, you know, and Brody King is every time I see him wrestle, he brings something out. Malachi Black's all-around performer. Then you got on the other side, you got Pac, one of the best wrestlers in the world. Rey Fénix, best high flyer in the world. I don't think it's relatively close. And you have one of the most charismatic luchadors in wrestling history in Pentagon. And it's just like those three versus three, anywhere in the world, any time in the world, 15-minute match, 10-minute match, an hour, they're going to tear the house down. And they're going to make it really, really, really hard to follow them. And it's just like, I'd almost rather see this be like the main event of the Dynamite the week of Double or Nothing instead of being on the pay-per-view. Like, really built to this six-man match as the main match on the Dynamite. You know, like, 9:30 Eastern time comes around and you just like you have those six go out there and you have them tear it down for 30 minutes and close out the Dynamite, and that's how you announce your Double or Nothing week with authority.
Yeah, I just got the hiccups right now, so I'm trying to get rid of them right now. It's not
Not a good situation. I heard something going on, and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on, so should I keep talking?
But that is me trying to get rid of these fucking hiccups.
No, but I just really think, they could be a part of Double or Nothing, which is going to be an amazing pay-per-view, but you're going to need something good for Dynamite. You're going to need something good for Rampage that week. I think the something good for Dynamite, the six-man match, and then, you know, you build towards Double or Nothing. But we will see. I would be happy with a Malachi Black versus Pentagon match. I would be a Black versus Pac. Maybe we can get that on the month coming up. It's just that we got a lot of talent in those six, and they're very versatile. So I am looking forward to this. Can be the standard that the six-man division be set on.
Damn it. All right. I'm going to try to get my way through this without doing this too much. We'll move on to the 10-man tag match between the Undisputed Elite and Varsity Blondes Lee Johnson and Brock Anderson, with Julia Hart on the ring steps continuing to show pretty much no facial expressions because of what happened with her in the House of Black. This match was pretty much for the Undisputed Elite, A, to sell their very nice t-shirts you can get on Shop AEW of the Undisputed Elite, which, if I'm not mistaken, is like the number two selling shirt right now on Shop, which is pretty much understandable. And also just trying to get the Young Bucks back on the side of Adam Cole and Red Dragon, because they were showing that they might not be interested in being around these guys anymore. Eventually, after they got the win with the quadruple BTE trigger and then the boom knee from Adam Cole onto Big Shoddy Lee Johnson, got the win. And then they handed out the Undisputed Elite shirts to the Bucks and they put them on, and we got that outstanding pose of all five of them in the ring. It looks so fucking cool. But this was a nice little prelim match before the main event, and it was cool to honestly, it was to sell the t-shirts as well, too, and they did a good job at it.
Yeah, they definitely did a great job at it. I plan on ordering the shirt before the Forbidden Door. Hopefully there'll still be like the five of them together by then. But great shirt, great match. But it was a squash match for the most part. Even how they ended, it was just trying to show and drive home the fact when the five of them are on the same page, you can't stop them. And now I believe two of the five are in the Owen Cup, and then one is trying to qualify next week. So it should be fun going forward. I am interested in where the story is going. I think when Kenny Omega comes back, whenever that is going to take this to a whole different level.
Yeah.
I tried to buy you some time, brother.
I'm trying so hard to get rid of him right now, but it's just not going well. But I'll bull rush my way through this main event match real quick, and then we'll throw it to Rampage, which I've yet to see, so Floyd can take that over completely. And by that point, I should have gotten rid of these fucking things. But hopefully it's funny at least. Anyway, main event, TNT Championship match between the current champion Sammy Guevara with his girlfriend Ty Conti by his side, facing off against Scorpio Sky. This was the coming out heel party for Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. The heat for them is outrageously high, and they played into it so well. I mean, for God's sakes, their tongues were all over each other that night. And Sammy, unfortunately, had a very dangerous, very scary spot in the ladder match. Of course, he tried to do a 640, I believe, off of the ladder, and just missed the landing onto Scorpio. Landed right on the back of his shoulder and like back of his neck. It was a very scary spot. I know Sammy says he's fine. He hasn't broke anything, but he does say that like he's in a lot of pain in that area. Hopefully there's nothing too serious, but it was a scary, scary spot. And if you're anybody who was saying, man, I really wish he broke his neck that night, go fuck yourself and leave this fucking fandom. We don't want you here. Stop. Like, I get it. You think they're an annoying couple. You think they're too much, yada, yada, yada. That doesn't mean you should wish injury on them or them to get hurt, seriously hurt in a situation like that. Like, knock it the fuck off. It is wrestling. Calm down. Like, seriously, it's just – it needs to stop. But either way, the match still was able to go on. We got a great spot with that barbed wire ladder. Really great use of that. Ty Conti got a nice little nut shot towards Dan Lambert. Paige VanZant came out. Those two started teeing off. The match was really solid, honestly. The one thing I wasn't a huge fan of was the fact that the match kind of finished off with Sammy flipping off Scorpio Sky. Scorpio bites the middle finger, pushes him into the barbed wire ladder, which is a great spot. But then after that, like, you're already like, all right, Scorpio's winning the match right here. Sammy proceeds to get back onto the ladder after hitting the barbed wire ladder and gets knocked down for a second time, and then Scorpio wins it. You didn't need him to go up that second time. That finish of the barbed wire ladder spot should have been the finish. That should have been it. Him going up for the second time made no sense to me. And if anything, Sammy should have gotten out of that match as quickly as possible and then checked on his fucking neck and back because he really landed badly right there. But Scorpio Sky is the TNT champion, two-time TNT champion. Frankie Kazarian comes out. They smile. They handshake. And then we know that they will be defending the championship, and that'll be a title match. I am hopefully able to chill and get rid of these hiccups now that I've gone through that. Great match. Couple things I would have liked differently. And also that spot was really, really scary. And it harped on the match because I was genuinely fearful for Sammy because it looked really bad.
Well, I'll go ahead and take a little break here because I'm about to bitch a little bit about this. I'm glad you talked about the match so I don't have to. It was a really good match. Sammy Guevara, amazing performer. Scorpio Sky, really good performer. He was as over as he's ever been in the company. And then he won the title for the second time, and it was a loud pop. Oh, my God. My biggest problem with it is the TNT title division. The division created by my hero and my favorite wrestler, Cody Rhodes. And what he did with this division is he made it not a mid-card title. He made it like a 1-in-1A, a title on the equivalency of the world title. And basically, since Miro won the title, it hasn't felt like... I mean, since Miro lost, it hasn't felt like that. The whole Sammy Guevara losing pretty much every time he challenges, you know, anybody seriously. And going back from... It went from Sammy to Cody to Sammy to Scorpio to Sammy to Scorpio again. and it's just been too much. I know what this TNT title needs. It needs to be redeemed. It needs the Redeemer. It needs Miro. Scorpio Sky, I'm like, I'm all about giving him a shot. He had this great undefeated record. They got the belt back on him. I just give him some bangers. Just give him some really good matches and let this man win. Let him and Frankie go out there and do their best for 15 minutes. They really got to elevate the importance of this title again. It just feels very much, it doesn't even feel like a mid-card title. It almost feels like a 24/7 title at this point.
Wow.
Because they change it so much, and it's just, oh my God. It felt like whoever was the TNT champion was the number two guy in the company. You know what I mean? He wasn't the world champion, but he was the number two guy. It doesn't feel like that right now. And it has nothing to do with Scorpio. I actually love Scorpio Scott. I've thought about building the TNT division around him. So hopefully they can really drive home this part as far as this. But he needs to hold this belt 80 days or 90 days. He really needs. They should not do another title change until either right before All Out or right after. It really needs to be solidified in importance. And I think Scorpio can do it. And I think you have talent on the roster with Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, you know, and you got Adam Cole, and you got Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs and Orange Cassidy. I think you have a list of people on that talent level that you could put up against Scorpio Sky, put on a bunch of banger matches, and really get the TNT title back to where it's supposed to be. Because right now, doesn't feel special at all. It just feels like another belt. I mean, it just might be me. But it just feels like another mid-card title. It honestly feels like the ROH TV title is more important than the TNT title right now. And we will get to that because we got an ROH TV title on Rampage. But I just really needed to get that off my chest because I actually like everybody that's been the TNT championship a lot. I think Sammy Guevara is immensely talented. I love Scorpio Sky. I love Cody, but I just think how the story has been told, how it's been passed around, has diminished the legacy of the belt that was there before. But I believe that's it for Dynamite.
Yes. Yeah. I'm trying so hard right now. I will once again say, like I said, I haven't seen a Rampage yet, so this will be fully Floyd while I try to get rid of these fucking hiccups.
Yes, there was 4 matches on Rampage. I don't remember like all the segments, but I do remember all the matches. First was Darby versus Swerve. I was really looking forward to this match. They get into the match. They're having it in, you know, Swerve's a little ahead of Darby. But halfway through the match, Ricky Starks come down to the ring. Sting jumps between Ricky Starks and the ring, and Sting just kind of points to the back and like, hey, you know, go to the back. We're not doing it like this. Darby's down. Swerve gets back in the ring. Darby puts him in his leg lock pin. I forgot what it's called. I think it's like Last Rites. And I think that's what it's called. And he got the 1-2-3. Him and Swerve kind of looked at each other. They it's going to skip around, but it's the best way to do it is to extend what happened in the back. Darby's like, dude, you know I don't want to win that way. And Swerve's like, yeah, I know that ain't even you. That didn't have nothing to do with you, but you should go win the Owen. He's like, the problem is I got to get deeper into this thing with he's got to get deeper in this thing with Starks and Hobbs. He's like, so I got to go get the Limitless one, and we got to handle that business. So looks like he's going to call Keith Lee to go fight Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs. So, you know, and Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs seem to be having a tag team title match coming up soon, as discussed on Dynamite. So we're going to see how that works out. The second match was the baddies. Well, it's Jade Cargill and her baddies, which is Kiera Hogan and Red Velvet. They come to the ring, Jade's in the middle, and they have fans. And the money, the fans are money. They're $100 bills or whatever, and they're making fans. And they have a pretty much a solid squash match against Willow Nightingale, Trisha Dora, and Sky Blue. I mean, Red Velvet and Sky Blue have to fight each other forever, I'm guessing. But it's Red versus Blue. But, yeah, at the end of the match came when Jade gets in the ring, has Trisha Dora is about to hit her with the what's her finisher called? Yeah, good Lord. I'm blanking on the finisher, but the Glam Slam, basically. About to hit her finisher, Red Velvet comes and tackles Willow Nightingale, and Kira, I believe, got against Sky Blue, and then Jay got the win. And it's kind of funny. It's like, you know, people talk about representation mattering. Now you have a three-woman faction that is all people of, you know, African-American descent. You know, that's kind of cool. Black ladies in a faction. That's kind of awesome. So, and, you know, they're the baddies. So I definitely like this group and like it where it's going forward. It looks like they're kind of building to Britt Baker versus Jade eventually. And so now Britt Baker has her three. Jade has her three. So we got a nice little war that can set out, that can play out over the next few months if they want to make it that long. Then we get Keith Lee versus Colton Gunn. Colton Gunn's first singles match in AEW. On, you know, TV, and Keith Lee gives Colton Gunn his first loss. There was a segment in the back where the Acclaimed came up to the Guns, and they're like, yeah, you know, basically, do y'all want to team up? I'm guessing they're trying to start a faction. They say, you want a scissor with the Acclaimed? And then the Guns said they had to go talk to their dad, and Austin called him daddy, and it was interesting. I'm trying to see where that's going to go. Are they going to try to build a super faction there? The last match, the main event, Samoa Joe versus Trent Barretta. Very physical match. You know, Trent really put up a fight. Samoa Joe went for his muscle buster. Trent got out of it. Samoa Joe then caught him with the Kikina clutch on the floor and, you know, choked him out, put him to sleep. Samoa Joe is still your ROH TV title champion. Then after the match, the music hits. Jay Lethal, Sonjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh come out. Jay Lethal tells Satnam to go get Samoa Joe. Orange Cassidy, who was down there with Trent Barretta, jumps between Satnam Singh and the ring, puts his hand in the pocket because he's not in the sleeve anymore, and he kicks Satnam Singh in the leg, and then Singh throws him. There's a big old fight, and then Jay Lethal and Samoa Joe are fighting in the ring, and pretty much it goes off with a bunch of fighting as they extend the Jay Lethal Samoa Joe storyline. Ian Riccaboni was on commentary, and he got to drive home the fact that Samoa Joe was the one that brought Jay Lethal in the ROH 18 years ago. So this is a fight that's 18 years in the making. It's a great story to build the new ROH on, which I call it the new ROH, but he seems to be sticking with the old ROH. And that was your episode of Rampage. I wouldn't call it a great episode. I'd say it was a really good episode. Darby and Swerve is the one that kind of got me, because it ended up being about the interference and stuff, but good Lord, I really wanted to see them put on a match. I know we're going to get it in the future, and I know it's going to be a big deal, and I know they're going to absolutely kill it, but it was just like, oh God, that's like, I saw Swerve and Darby got super excited. I think we got like maybe 10 minutes of wrestling. I am looking forward to seeing it. I know that they're online, and I can go watch their matches from the other companies in, but I want to see an AEW, so I'm looking forward to what they do later. So, yeah, that was Rampage. We got some announcements for Dynamite next week. May 4th, Dynamite. I believe, I don't remember where it's from, actually. Let's see. May 4th, Dynamite. AWTix.com. May 4th, Dynamite is in Baltimore, Maryland. They're also doing tapings, session one, session two, dark tapings in Orlando this weekend. So if you live in the Orlando, Florida area, you can go check out those. Go and check out those matches. But the matches announced for Dynamite May 4th preview is Jeff Hardy versus Bobby Fish in an Owen Hart qualifier. Have no idea who's going to win this match. Jeff and Matt did cut a promo talking about how excited they were to be. They knew Owen and they miss him, and how excited they be in, to be in the Owen Hart qualifier, and how this will be Jeff Hardy's first singles match in AEW versus Bobby Fish. Then we got the ROH Women's World Title Unification match. We got Deonna Purrazzo, the ROH Women's Champion, versus the interim ROH champion, Mercedes Martinez. That match should be a banger. I hope they give them time. I hope Tony gives them 20. I hope they get their 20. I think they can really, those two women are so talented that they can put on a very entertaining 20-minute match, and I really hope they get their time. Then we get Wardlow versus MJF's mystery opponent for him, which has pretty much everyone sussed out as W. Morrissey from Impact. So, and there's a way this is Impact invading AEW as we get Deonna Purrazzo and W. Morrissey on the card against Mercedes Martinez and Wardlow, respectively. And then I don't know if this is the main event, but we got to build up a grudge match on Rampage, because during one of the segments, commercial breaks, Santana just came out and just knocked the shit out of Jericho and was fighting him. And then the security pulled him off, and they announced a grudge match. It's going to be Chris Jericho versus Santana. Jericho said, "I put a hit out on you, and I'm coming to get you, Santana." And so it's literally announced as a grudge match for Wednesday. So those are the four matches we have. Looks like it's shaping up to be a solid Dynamite. If the last few weeks have been any inclination of what's going on, they're probably going to add a multi-man match. The Blackpool Combat Club is going to beat up somebody. And, you know, you'll probably get a couple more matches added to the show. And, of course, you're going to get a CM Punk segment, because that's what CM Punk does. But that's what the Dynamite preview for next week looks like. How you feeling over there, Austin?
It's not getting much better, bro. It's the worst. It's one of the ones that just doesn't leave. It doesn't leave. There's one thing I want to try to get out eventually, because this is how I wanted to end the show, because I saw the inspiration. Cassie Lee and Jesse McKay announced they are retiring from pro wrestling, or they are stepping away from pro wrestling to pursue other ventures. I just want to say
that she got a movie role that she
I heard about movie. That. Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. I just want to say, cause I had so much love for the Iconics, and now the formerly known as the Iconics, and now the Inspiration. I love those two. When they came into Impact and they quickly won the knockouts tag team titles. I was so happy for them. Sad to see them leave. I still thought they could still go, but I'm glad to see that they've got things that they're doing. But yeah, I was a huge fan of theirs, so I'm glad to see that they're doing well outside of wrestling. But I am going to wrap this show up now, because
And they did announce one more. They did announce the trio match.
Okay.
Next week, it's going to be Blackpool Combat Club versus The Butcher, The Blade, and Angelico. So AFHO. So as I said, they'll probably add a Blackpool Combat Club match. They did add a Blackpool Combat Club match. That seems to be the thing going. And the bit of news that I didn't cover is the NXT did a round of releases today. I meant to say this earlier and didn't bring that up, but they did a round of round of releases, the main people that most people will recognize, Dexter Lumis, Persia Parada, because she's been on NXT 2.0 TV. And the biggest names are Malcolm Bivens, formerly Stokely Hathaway on the Independent Circle, and Dakota Kai, who's been with WWE or NXT for like a long time. They've all got their release. Dakota, you know, said she basically saw it coming. The thing with Malcolm Bivens is that they actually tried to re-sign him. He turned it down, and I guess that's what led to his release. So I, again, not a big everyone from WWE should come to AEW guy, but I think Malcolm Bivens and Dakota Kai are no-brainers. Private Party, I think that's perfect for Malcolm Bivens. He's had an independent thing with Orange Cassidy. I just think he knows a lot of people in there. He's a great voice. There's a lot of different ways. There's a lot of people that can be elevated with his voice. So I'm looking forward to what he does after his 30 days is up. And Dakota Kai, formerly Evie on the Independence, she's literally one of my favorite wrestlers. So I love the way she performs. So I am rooting for her. I think she is exactly what the AEW, a solid women's wrestler. It's exactly what the AEW women's roster needs. I'm not saying they lack solid wrestlers, but you can always use more. So yeah, that was that part of it. And now close it out.
I will try. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of All Things Elite. Again, please continue to download this fine show on Google or Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to us on Spotify or any other podcasting platforms, give us a share with your friends, families, coworkers, whoever you wish. You can leave a rating, a review. You can leave a donation through Red Circle. And the easiest way to support us is on social media. We are at AT Elite Pod. At Social Suplex are the guys that make this show possible. Please check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. I am getting out of here ASAP so I can get rid of these things and go to sleep. But I will throw it to Floyd so he can take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
Ah, keep it nice. Keep it short and sweet. Be nice to people. If you see some way you can help someone out, do it. I mean, the best way for life to continue is just, you know, people helping each other. So do that. And with that, I leave you how I always leave you. Whether it is home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.